Listen all you want.
Like the hammer of Thor.
We'll play more.
Gee whiz.
AFN the Eagle.
I've been having dreams. Jumping on a trampoline. Flipping in the air. I never land, just float there. As I'm looking up, suddenly the sky erupts. Flames alert the trees, spread to fallen leaves. Now they're right upon me. Wait if I'm on fire. How am I so deep in love when I dream of dying? Been having dreams, splashing in the summer stream, tripping, I fall in. I wanted it to happen. My body turns to ice, crushing weight of paradise. Solid block of gold, lying in the cold. I feel right. Wait if I'm on fire. How am I so deep in love when I dream of dying? I never feel so loved. Wait if I'm on fire. How am I so deep in love when I dream of dying? I never feel so.
Get ready for Scotty G's Midday Mix.
Is that a real show?
No, it's somebody's making a joke.
Do not attempt to change the station.
We're telling you children now so you can adjust and not make jokes.
Gentlemen, this is a disc jockey.
We're crazy!
To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Good morning, and welcome or welcome back to the Scotty G Midday Mix. I'm your host, Air Force Staff Sergeant Scott Goggin, and I got with me a very special guest today. In the studio, we have the U.S. Forces Japan and 5th Air Force Commander, Lieutenant General Jerry Martinez. Sir, how are you doing today?
Great, thank you. It's great to be here at AFN.
Yes, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and hang out with us here at AFN. And I don't know about you, sir, but I've just been loving this weather so far here at Yokota for this late in January, but I don't want to jinx it.
Yeah,
so.
I'm completely digging it. You know, normally winter is snow and you know, wind and rain, and you know, I shouldn't say anything because now it's going to change, but yeah, it's been great. And really want to thank all of AFN for having me here today. I'm a big fan of AFN. I watch it on TV every day, and I love your radio show, so it's great to be here.
Well, thank you, sir. I know we appreciate your support here at AFN, and I know you're pretty busy today, so I'll jump right into it. I got some questions here for you, and I wanted to kind of center them around your career in the Air Force and reflect on them, since I know you will be moving on to a new chapter soon. For those listening who are unaware, what's happening in the beginning of February?
Yeah, so on the 5th of February, we're going to have a change of command. And at the time then, Lieutenant General Schneider will come in and become the new commander, and then I will begin my transition into retirement in a post-Air Force life. So real excited about that. Big transition for me. All I've known is wearing a uniform since I left high school. being that I went to the Air Force Academy. So it's a big transition, but we're really excited about it. It's going to be good to kind of see what goes on out there on that other side of the fence. But no doubt I will always miss the military and wearing a uniform.
Yes, sir. I know the feeling. I joined the Air Force right out of high school myself. And I looked on your bio a little bit, a long and successful career, no doubt. And the first question I had for you is, what were your goals or aspirations joining the military? Now, when you first joined, did you ever think Second Lieutenant Martinez was one day going to be a Lieutenant General Martinez?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll be honest with you. When I joined the military, I joined for one reason, and that was to be an Air Force pilot. As a child, I loved aviation. I grew up in a Air Force family, and my father used to take me to the runway many, many times, and I would stand there for hours just watching aircraft take off and land. And even to this day, as a now a 55-year-old kid, you know, I can sit at a commercial airport or anywhere and watch airplanes take off and land all day. I just love it. And so I joined to be a pilot. And then, you know, once I got in and started experiencing everything, you know, your goals and your things change. I never joined nor imagined of being a general officer. That was something that just through, you know, timing and some luck and some things that went my way worked out. But what I wanted to do was just be a good Air Force officer. And, you know, my goals and things changed. You know, I started, again, wanting to just be a pilot. But then you realize that, you know, when you're in the armed forces, you're more than just a pilot. You're expected to be a leader. You're expected to be a good officer and all of those kind of things. And so as I got older, you know, that shifted a little bit in my mind.
Excellent, sir. And now I know that when you were a young officer, maybe thinking of all the things in your possible career that could happen, was there ever maybe some kind of valuable lesson from a tough situation you could share for some of our listeners that would have helped you a lot if you maybe had that rewind button, maybe some words of wisdom to the young officers out there looking to one day potentially have a career in the Air Force and be a general officer?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, one of the things about the military is we're all given some incredible opportunities, and we're trained, we're given really, you know, valuable skills that many of the people that we went to high school with or junior high or college with don't have. And it's really easy in the military to start getting very confident in yourself. You know, we're confident by nature and we need to be. But I think the one of the most humbling lessons for me was just very simply as a young officer, you know, starting to really get confident and you know, really believe in yourself, which is important, but getting too overconfident and then you make a mistake. And then you realize that none of us are perfect and none of us, you know, do everything exactly right, and that it's really more about a team and the people around you that make you successful. And I was fortunate enough, you know, as a young lieutenant, one time a crew I was with, we messed up on a test. It was just a written test. And, you know, the next thing I know, we were all standing in front of a colonel in an office. And as a second lieutenant, that's terrifying. And this colonel was explaining to us why we shouldn't be missing any questions on a test. And that really humbled me. And I'm glad it happened to me as just a baby lieutenant, because I really learned from that, you know, one is we were a kind of a group of a crew that was, you know, being individuals when we should have been working as a team. And it also taught me that no matter how good, you know, you may think you are, you're really never that good. There's always room to learn. There's always room to get better. There's always room to improve. And I've tried to hold to that in every one of my jobs that I've held in the Air Force, is to never think that I know too much. I listen to my people. I learn from my people. I gain knowledge from my people. And I think it's made me a better officer.
Yes, sir. And I don't think, you know, maybe the Air Force in general, even the military, I don't think that anywhere else on the civilian side would put such young people responsible for so much. And speaking of which, you know, you talked about team, and it takes everyone working as a team to accomplish the mission. And also, we don't want to forget our enlisted personnel are a big part of that. So my question is, you know, what has been your personal experiences on the importance of enlisted service members?
Yeah, so a lot of people don't know this about me out there, but I'm actually an enlisted kid. I grew up in an enlisted family. My father's a retired Air Force Master Sergeant. So I get the enlisted because I am one. And when I was a young child, you know, I had the opportunity to see, you know, how our enlisted live, what's important to our enlisted, the tremendous sacrifice they make, how they're really the backbone of any organization, how they're the competent officials, you know, of what's going on, you know, within an organization. And I watched all this as a child. And so when I graduated from the Air Force Academy, you know, on that graduation day, my father, some would say gave me advice, others would say threatened me. I don't know how you will view it, but basically said, you know, you better always be taking care of your enlisted. And so I've made that part of my mantra in my career. And I really believe that I've accomplished that. You know, I care deeply about our enlisted forces. And the enlisted forces in our military, and it's all branches of the U.S. Armed Forces, they are what set the United States military apart from all the other militaries in the world. You know, I've been in many militaries, or, you know, been around them, you know, around the world, many different countries' militaries. And they certainly have fantastic, you know, NCOs and senior NCOs and all those. But in many of those cases, those individuals, they just follow orders. And our enlisted in our branches of the service, they're leaders. They're educated. They are very, very highly trained beyond just their skill, but they're trained in managing and leading people. You know, they're trained in making very, very tough decisions. And, you know, that's why in many of the meetings, you know, you'll see a general officer and sitting right next to them is their chief. And that's because that's the signal that we want sent, is that our enlisted are always right there next to us. And we have a lot of confidence in them. We have a lot of trust in them. And there are some really, really smart, you know, NCOs, senior NCOs, and even youngsters, E1s and E2s that I've met in my career that have greatly, greatly impressed me.
Well, I know that I, as an enlisted member, appreciate that, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners appreciate that as well. So we wanted to do a quick music break. I'm learning more and more about you as we go on with this interview. And yeah. Can we give the listeners a little taste of what kind of music General Martinez is listening to?
Yeah, so graduating college in the 80s, you know, I'm one of them classic rockers. I like that 80s music and all that. And one of my favorite songs, especially being in the class of 1986, was any song that had 86 in it. So there's one of my favorites, one called Jenny Jenny.
Excellent, sir. 867-5309 coming right up right here in Eagle 810, serving America's best.
Danny, I got no number.
takes a knocking and keeps on rocking.
You have unleashed the wolf.
AFN Tokyo, the Eagle.
I'm going to put a lot of fun.
Serving America's best.
Spent 24 hours, I need more hours with you. You spent the weekend getting even, ooh. We spent the late nights making things right between us. But now it's all good, babe. Roll that backwood, babe, and play me close. Cause girls like you run around with guys like me till sundown. When I come through, I need a girl like you, yeah, yeah. Girls like you love fun and yeah, me do what I want. When I come through, I need a girl like you, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I need a girl like you, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I need a girl like. Spent last night on the last flight to you. I took a whole day up trying to get way up. Ooh. We spent the daylight trying to make things right between us. And now it's all good, babe. Roll that backwood, babe. And let me close.
Maybe it's 6:45, maybe I'm barely alive. Maybe you're taking my shit for the last time, yeah. Maybe I know that I'm drunk, maybe I know you're the one. Maybe I'm thinking it's better if you drive.
Not too long ago, I was dancing for dollars. No, it's really real if I let you be my mama. You don't want a girl like me, I'm too crazy. But every other girl you meet is too gay. I'm sure them other girls were nice enough, but you need someone to spice it up. So who you gonna call? Cardi, Cardi. Come and rev it up like a Harley, Harley. Why is the best food always forbidden? I'm coming to you now doing 20 over the limit. The red light, stop. I don't play when it comes to my heart, let's get it though. I don't really want a white horse in a carriage. I'm thinking more of white horses and carriage. I need you right here, cause every time you fall, I play with this kitty like you play with your guitar.
Cause girls like those like you.
Maroon 5 and Cardi B right there with Girls Like You. And if you're just tuning in for the first time, you are missing out because we have in the studio the U.S. Forces Japan and 5th Air Force Commander, Lieutenant General Jerry Martinez with us. Sir, thank you once again for taking time out of your busy schedule to come hang out at AFN.
Yeah, thank you too. It's great to be here at AFN. Great day in Japan, and I'm really glad to be here and chat with you this morning.
Perfect. Yeah, so now we talked a little earlier about your career, some valuable lessons you learned, and the importance of our enlisted personnel. Can you share one of your favorite memories while serving?
Yeah, I think one that really resonates with me forever. I was a really young pilot and flying out of Charleston, South Carolina. And for those that don't know, I'm from the state of Oklahoma, you know, an Oklahoma Sooner fan. And one morning, you know, I got a phone call and I was sitting kind of in an alert status and got called and they said, hey, we need you to get to Miami International Airport immediately. And so I got up in the middle of the night and I went to my base and I jumped in my airplane and I was the commander and I flew to Miami. And when I got there, who I found was looking for me was the Miami Metro-Dade Rescue Team. They had about, 20, 30 dogs and a bunch of rescuers and people like that. And, you know, many of your viewers are going to be too young to remember this, but there was a really horrific terrorist attack in Oklahoma City that blew up a giant building, the Murrah Building in downtown Oklahoma City. And it was, especially for people in Oklahoma where I'm from, it was very, devastating to watch and hear that on TV. And they needed rescue people to go in and search the buildings in the rubble to try to find people that were buried in the rubble. And it was just really odd that, I lived and grew up in Oklahoma, went to pilot training in Oklahoma, and years later I was in South Carolina and there's a disaster in Oklahoma and I got the phone call to go help. And so, we put those people on our airplanes, we put those dogs on our airplanes, and I made that plane fly as fast as it could possibly fly to get to Oklahoma City. And it was really personally rewarding for me because, that was my home, that was my state. And there were people there in need. And any of the missions that we do in the military where you can help somebody is always special. It always makes you feel good. It makes you remember them. But when it's one in your own home state, it was even more memorable.
Wow. And full circle, too. Like you said, you're coming from Oklahoma. You're helping that out. So that's incredible. Thank you for doing that. And I'm sure a lot of people thank you as well for getting that aircraft there pretty quickly.
Yeah. In fact, I was just speaking at a pilot training graduation at Vance Air Force Base in Enid, Oklahoma in December. And so as I get ready to transition out of the military, I was welcoming all the brand new pilots that I was sitting in that same auditorium, many, many years ago, getting their pilot wings. And I actually told them that story. And I told them, the thing that you never know in the armed forces, and it's not just for pilot, it's for each of you sitting in this room, it's for all of our listeners out there, is you never know what the next day is going to bring in the military. There's been many mornings I got up and thought I was doing something to find out some big issue or thing happened in the world, and it was going to change what I thought my future looked like.
Wow, sir, it's crazy how things go full circle like that sometimes. And you did touch on your flying career a little bit at Charleston. I looked over your bio. It said that you spent a lot of your time in the Air Mobility Command, over 4,000 hours as well, flying time. I wanted to ask you, it seemed like you had a few heavies on there, maybe a refueler. What was your favorite aircraft during your career?
Yeah, so, I have a bunch of reasons why I like them all, and that sounds like a good political answer, but I really love the planes. Again, as a young kid who just wanted to fly, each time I switched airplanes, I got new experiences and got to see different things. And I started in the KC-135, so in-flight refueling was where I got my wings, where I learned to be a pilot, and so that's always been very special to me. But later I moved to the airlift mission and I found the C-141, which again, your young listeners will have to Google that airplane, to see what that thing was.
I'm Googling it right now, sir.
I don't even know if Google knows that airplane anymore. but I flew it was the Starlifter and that was the first time that I flew around the world, that I just took off and one morning I might be in Nairobi, Kenya. And then the next day I could be in, somewhere in South America. And that was really exciting for me to get to do something like that because I love to travel and I love to see the world. And then when I transitioned out of that, I got to do the same thing, but in a really new aircraft, and that's the C-17. That was fun. I'd never flown a big giant airplane with a stick, like a fighter, and it flies in many respects like a fighter. It really goes left and right fast. It goes up and down fast, and it was an amazing airplane. But I think the one that was probably the most comfortable of all the planes I flew was the big giant C-5 Galaxy. That's the one where the nose opens and the tail opens and you can drive a tank up on that thing. I hate to give out aircrew secrets here, but when you go up on the flight deck where the pilots are, there's actually two like full rooms up there with beds in them and refrigerators and all these things. And so when I would fly those long missions across the ocean, I was a bit spoiled. We would put in nice, good meals in the ovens and go stretch out on the bed if it wasn't our turn to be in the seat flying. But what I do have to say is the Air Force at large has picked a great group of airplanes. I've had a blast flying so many of them, and I definitely will miss them.
Yeah, and I was looking over your bio, and I saw that, our careers are obviously very different, and I was trying to find some common ground. And my first base, this is my third, but my first base, was Dover Air Force Base, and actually covered the mission there, and I got to fly in a lot of C-17s, the C-5s, the M model, because I'm sure your model was a little louder than the M. I'm super fortunate that they got the engines a little quieter instead of the screeching building flying in the air. It was an incredible experience to not only be able to just fly in those heavies, and it's always a little special part of my heart, just because that's one of the few times I probably am able to fly in my career and cover the amazing mission that you guys did over there.
Yeah, so that's wonderful to hear. I was the Deputy Ops Group Commander at Dover, and that's when I really started getting spoiled in flying the C-5, and you're right, that was the A and B model. But I got lucky a few years later when I was a general and I was in a certain job, and they said, hey, what plane do you want to fly? And I actually had a choice, and I went back and flew the C-5M model that you're talking about. And it was pretty awesome. You know, we got out on the road and we never broke. Got to take it all over the world, and even actually flew one of my last missions around the world. So we started out on the East Coast and coasted into the United States on the West Coast and went all the way around the world in it.
Wow. Yeah, the distance that you can fly, and what you mentioned either, the amount that you could put in just the fuselage is insane on a C-5. So I'm glad that you were able to fly at least the M model and went full circle with that as well. But awesome, sir. Hey, once again, if you were just tuning in for the first time, we are with U.S. Forces Japan and 5th Air Force Commander, Lieutenant General Jerry Martinez. So stay tuned in. We will hear from him some more shortly after some music. And speaking of flying, here's Lenny Kravitz on Eagle 810, serving America's best.
Above the trees, over the seas, and all the green.
And that was Lenny Kravitz right there with Fly Away. You are tuned into the Scotty G Midday Mix with me, Air Force Staff Sergeant Scott Goggin. And if you are just tuning in for the first time, we have in the studio the U.S. Forces Japan and 5th Air Force Commander, Lieutenant General Jerry Martinez. Sir, thanks again for coming in and hanging out with us.
Yeah, thank you very much. Great to be at AFN on this fine Yokota Day. I appreciate y'all having me in the studio.
Yes, sir. So now we talked a lot about your career, some of your favorite aircraft, some of your favorite memories. And I wanted to get into, if you had one piece of advice that you would give to anyone beginning a career, non-military, military, what would it be?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, you learn a lot as you develop and go higher up in the ranks, and especially as you become part of the team that is mentoring and teaching, you know, our young officers and our young enlisted to grow up to be senior enlisted leaders and, you know, senior officers. And I've learned so many things along the way, some through, you know, the school of hard knocks and learning them myself, and then some by, you know, helping mentor and teach others. And I've got a couple of things that I think are really important for somebody starting out their career. The first and foremost is don't change who you are. You know, human beings are all different and everybody's different. And, you know, you've had supervisors and commanders and people like that. And you see some that are outgoing, you some that are introverts, you see, you know, a wide range of how people are. But what I have found that the leaders that are the best are the ones that just stay true to who they are. You know, instead of trying to be somebody else, you know, be who you are, stay true to those values, the things that drive you, the things that are important to you. And you'll always, you know, do the best, I think, you know, in your career and in your development. And, you know, when you see like, you know, some of our folks that grow up and it's the first time they become a commander or the first time that they become, you know, now they're a brand new like senior NCO. They've obviously been very successful to get to that point. And so when you get to that point, you know, why would you change who you are and, you know, go, well, now that I'm a commander, I think I have to be like this. Well, no, you don't. You have to be the person that got you there because you were good enough to get there. And so why would you change that? And then the other thing I think that I really would recommend to people, and we talked about it a little bit earlier in the broadcast, is that you really need to be humble in what you do in the military and understand where you fit in a much larger military. And what I really mean by that is, you know, you'll hear people in promotion ceremonies and things like that that will say, you know, I want to thank all the people around me who really were the part of getting me promoted. I will tell you that's the truth. You know, I know me, I know my limitations, I know what I'm not good at. And all throughout my career, I've surrounded myself with amazing people. And they're the ones that really have helped me become, you know, what little success I've achieved. They're the ones that were really a big part of it. And there's a lot of things that they could do well that I couldn't do well. But they did such a good job that they helped my organization. And in that word help, I want to jump on that just a little bit too. If, you know, one of the things that the men and women who are, whether they're under your command or, you know, you're their supervisor, where you will really earn their respect is when they know that they can always go to you for help. And it's so important that we help each other because we're in a tough business. You know, I always tell people we're not making cupcakes for a living. We're in the armed forces and it's tough business. And we have some wonderful and fun and great days, but we also have some very tough days. And people just need help. Sometimes it's in their personal life. Sometimes it's in their professional life. It might be, you know, with a relationship they're having. It could be who knows what. But life throws a lot of things at everybody, no matter who you are, no matter what rank you are. And people need help. And when you're that supervisor, when you're that leader, when you're that commander that people go, I can always go to that individual and help them, and then know that they will help me. They will do anything for you. You know, and that's what drives your men and women. It's knowing that their leaders care about them, that they truly value them, and that they're always going to be there to help them. And so I would recommend to folks who come into the military to help somebody. And that sounds like a simple thing to do, but I mean truly help somebody. Somebody who just has a thing going on in their life. And by the way, you don't have to be one of the old guys to do that. You can be a brand new, no stripe, you know, 18-year-old right out of basic training, you know, but one of your buddies just needs a little help with something, you know. Or it might even be, you know, when you get to your unit and you may not have a whole lot of stripes, but, you know, that two or three or four striper out there, you know, has got something going on, and you can give them a little bit of advice based on an experience you may have had. But help people, help people, help people. It makes the armed forces better, and I think it'll make you an all-around much better respected leader.
Yes, sir. And I think that's a mantra that I also kind of follow, because in a sense, everyone has a supervisor. You know, everyone has a supervisor. You're going to have plenty of supervisors. I think towards the end of your career, middle of your career, however long it is, you're going to remember the mentors. I think that's the biggest thing that I remember going through my career, you know. So that's what I try to strive to be, is trying to be a mentor, so that people will come up to you and ask for that help and not feel like you're just going to shut them down. So,
yeah, absolutely. I have this little saying that I tell people, and I think one day I'm going to write a book about it. I'm going to name my book, Always Ask the Second Question. And what I mean by that is, you know, what you don't want is that person that walks up to you and says, hey, how you doing today? And before you can even spit out how you're doing, they're already looking at somebody else, or their eyes are wandering the room of who do I need to talk to next? And it's just an indicator, you know, that maybe they really don't care how you're doing that day. You know, and taking a moment when you ask someone how they're doing, and then go, so how's the family, you know, or hey, who you betting on the, you know, the Super Bowl, or, you know, always having that second question and letting people know that you actually do have time for them, that you take an interest in them, and that you care about what they have to say, I really believe sets leaders apart.
Well, thank you, sir. I know I appreciate that. I'm sure a lot of the listeners as well appreciate that. And now, kind of going more locally, you've been here the last few years in Japan. I would ask you a question of, what is your favorite part been so far being here in Japan the last few years, maybe experience-wise?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've really enjoyed is the many, many Japanese citizens that I've met in the job. And it's always fun to go to a foreign country and take in their culture and learn their culture and meet their people. And throughout my career, I've been really blessed that I've had an opportunity to do that. As a young officer, another thing you'll have to Google, there was a war called Desert Storm a long time ago. And you know, I was a young baby captain. I was brand new captain. And, you know, the next thing I knew, I was flying in the Middle East in a war. And just the experiences of meeting the people in the countries that I was deployed to over there, and I've been deployed to the Middle East now 4 times. Was really amazing. And then I lived in Europe as part of NATO, so there were 28 other nations beyond the United States of different people that I got to work with. And, you know, understanding what is important to somebody who lives in you know, Estonia, a country that we don't go to a whole lot, versus, you know, somebody who lives in Spain or France, was really valuable. And so I tried to take that in while I was here in Japan. And I've met a lot of senior officials, but I've also met a lot of just nice Japanese citizens, and truly some incredibly kind people, some caring people. And even one day, my wife Kim and I, we were in the subway, the metro in Tokyo. And me being a general, we're always paranoid, right? We're always worried about force protection and all those things. We're walking around, and I told her, I said, hey, there's a guy following us. And I noticed him because I watch for that kind of stuff. And I said, so just keep acting normal and whatever, but this guy's following us. And so we moved a little bit, and we're on our way looking for a gate, and we're looking at our you know, our subway map, and the guy walked up and said, hey, you guys look like you're lost. And he was correct. We were having trouble finding, you know, the subway that we needed to take, the train. And he was actually following us because he truly could see that we weren't sure where we were going, and he was so worried about helping us. And he ended up walking us literally to our gate and saying, this is how you need to go. This is the train you look for. And then when you get here, go to there. And that's one of the things that I just really love about the Japanese people, is they always want to help you. And if you talk to your friends, I think everybody's got stories like that of, you know, people that surprised them by their kindness and their caring and their willing to help you. And so I think that's probably one of the things that I appreciate most about living here in this great country.
Yes, sir. I think whenever I get anyone asking me from the States, whether it be my friends, family, what's your favorite part, you know, I do mention that the culture here is amazing. I know that the food here, I'm a big foodie, it's amazing as well. But I think the part that really hits home and is going to make it hard to leave, I think, in a few years, is the people.
Yeah.
And I think they are some of the nicest people I think I've ever met. Like you said, that help. I think most of us have had a situation where people are super nice here. They'll just come up to you and help you out, even take you to the right gate and the right train. and get you safe. So I'm glad that you had that experience, and I'm sure many of our listeners had as well.
Yeah, thank you. It's something I will, like you, miss greatly, because I don't know that I've been in a country where, at large, there's so many people that are just helpful and caring and want to make sure that your day's going well.
And now, that was your favorite experience. Another question I wanted to ask you was, if there was one thing, say you come back to Japan in the future, and you could only see one thing, what would it be? What was your favorite view, sight, area? What just spoke to you here in Japan?
Yeah, I think the thing that I most want to see is what I actually didn't see when I was here, you know. And many of my friends told us that you really need to go to Kyoto. That is like the town, you know, the city that is like the traditional Japan and all of that. And my wife Kim and I, you know, we made that one of our goals, is that we want to get to Kyoto and we want to go experience this Japanese culture and really take this in. But there was a little bit of activity in my 2 years here called North Korea that changed my plans a little bit. Things got pretty intense for a while when we had missiles going over our heads. We had numerous missiles being launched right into the Sea of Japan. And, you know, our headquarters and the people in Japan were really, really focused on the potential of a future conflict, you know, that could occur, depending on how that played out. And so we didn't get the opportunity to travel quite as much as I thought we would. When I lived in Europe, we traveled all the time and really took that in. So if I ever do come back, our plan is that we want to go to Kyoto and take in a little culture down there.
Yes, sir. That's my goal. Hopefully next year is Kyoto, Osaka area, taking that culture. I think so far one of my favorite things is being able to come into work every day in the morning here at Yokota and just seeing that mountain range and then Mount Fuji out, just overlooking the entire place. It is just such a gorgeous view, especially on a crystal clear day.
Yeah, you know, another kind of goal we had was to climb Mount Fuji. Yep. I think every American comes here and says they want to do that.
Until you look at look it up close and you're like, ugh.
Yeah, so I had a lot of my friends and, you know, I could tell. So they'd climb it and I'd say, hey, how was it? You know, and they come down and says, you know, it was fun once. You know, and they all qualified that, you know, it's a great time to do one time, which told me it was pretty tough. And, you know, I try to stay in shape and so does my wife, you know, but I think, you know, I don't know if I would have made it or not. I know many people that have climbed the mountain and done very, very well and said it was a pretty awesome experience. But maybe in the future we might try that too.
Yeah, I think you're going to have it. I don't think it's in the middle ground. It's either you loved it or you hate it. But I do think that I will try to do it once.
Yeah.
But maybe once I'll have to spend about a year on the maybe stair climber in the Yokota gym here.
That's right.
To prepare. But last minute, you mentioned your wife. You know, I know you wanted to give some kudos to the military spouses listening and what they do on a day-to-day basis, especially serving here overseas as well, or being over here overseas. It takes the whole family to participate in the mission.
Yeah, you know, there are so many sacrifices that our families make that I don't think the rest of the world really truly understands until you've been in the boots of those families, you know, and understand, you know, what they do. I look at my career, and I mentioned earlier, you know, 4 deployments to the Middle East, some of them very long deployments. As a pilot, gone many of the times flying around, and, you know, schools, and then those unexpected TDYs, and then you have training and all of the things that go on, you know, and the people who absorb all that are our families. Why we're out, you know, maintaining our professional, you know, being and getting better at the things that the Air Force expects us to be good at. And our families make so many sacrifices. Our spouses, in many, many cases, you know, they're the ones running the ranch and raising the children and doing all those things while the husband or wife, the service member, you know, is coming through for a short moment and then on their way out the door to the next, you know, ship deployment or, you know, the next rotation of aircraft moving or something like that. And so I have great, great respect for what our spouses do. They are the quiet warriors, you know, of our armed forces. They're the glue that keeps this all together. They help their spouse, their active duty, you know, member, cope with a very difficult job and with tough situations, and they're that sounding board that the uniform member can go home and talk to at night. But additionally, they do, like I said earlier, they have to run the ranch. You know, they've got to take over and manage things because you know, in our business, some nights you thought you might be coming home at 4 or 5 o'clock and you get home at 1 in the morning because things just don't go the way we all thought they would. And the other thing I'd really love to give a shout out that is included in that is, of course, the children that are in those families. You know, I can tell you from personal experience, my son went to 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade in a different school.
Wow.
You know, and when you're an athlete and you have to, you know, go to a new school, every time you show up, you have to prove yourself, you know, to the new coach that you're worthy of keeping there. And then many of our children, you know, who play sports, you know, those coaches in these civilian towns where we moved to, they know that you're a military kid and that you're going to probably leave in a year or two. And so they're investing in people that they want on their teams, you know, for 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 years. And that's just a very small example of sports, you know, but it goes to people who are in bands, you know, musicals, all the other things that our children, they have a much different life than most kids in the United States deal with. They have to be adaptive. They've got to be able to walk into new situations. They've got to learn to make friends very, very fast. And they have to be able to manage, you know, always changing environments. And that's not an easy thing to do. In some of the towns where we've lived, you know, throughout my career, we'll meet people that have never left their state, you know, and then our children, they can get a map out and highlight every state they've been in, and they've been to probably at least 40 plus states, you know, because of the lifestyle that we lead in the military. So I'm grateful to our families. I'm grateful to our spouses. They serve our country the same way that the member wearing the uniform serves. They just do it in a much quieter and different way.
Yes, sir. I think resiliency is definitely key when it comes to not only our spouses, but our children. And, you know, we cover a lot of military installations here at AFN Tokyo. And just hearing all of the resources and programs and just classes that they have for spouses and children to just help them and ease them into this life, as well as just having them and meet new people every day to help to make that change or PCS a little easier every time. It's just incredible for what our military does. So
yeah, it's fantastic, and I really appreciate all the programs that we have, you know, throughout all the branches of the military, you know, for our families. And you know, before we end up wrapping up today, there's something that's very important for me to do, and that is to thank AFN and thank all of you for what you do. You know, I've been watching AFN a long, long time. I don't know what we called it when I was a small child living in Ramstein, Germany, in the 70s. You know, where my dad was in the military, but we got a channel back then. It was one channel, you know, and we would all sit around the television and watch in black and white, whatever it was that was being piped out, you know. But it's been great to watch the migration of AFN and you know, now the many, many channels and digital channels. And I have sat in some faraway places around the world, you know, at weird hours and turn on AFN to catch a good football game, or, you know, to watch some news and try to learn what's going on in my country. But as a commander in this country, one of the things that AFN really, really helps me with is that they help message very important things out to the people. And I'm embarrassed to say, but it's true. I've even been watching AFN, and I'll see something on there about some upcoming this or that, then I'm the commander that I didn't even know was occurring. And then I'll run into my staff and say, what is this? You know, what is this going on? And, you know, tell me more about this. And then I'll get updated, you know, on a potential, you know, activity or exercise or something that's going on. But I thank AFN for what you do. You know, you guys serve our country with a very powerful weapon, and that's communication. And without good communication, you know, any organization can fall flat very, very quickly. And you not only do it, you know, right here at Yokota Air Base in great style, but, you know, it's the 54,000 plus men and women in uniform throughout Japan that see your messages as well and hear from their senior leaders. And then, of course, the millions around the world who watch AFN. So thanks to all of you for the fantastic job that you do.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that awesome kudos, as well as, you know, it is one of the craziest parts of being in AFN as we do, you know, radio remotes, going to the festivals around the military installations, the Kanto Plain, and just a lot of Japanese, even Japanese nationals coming up and saying, you know, oh, I watched AFN or listened to AFN since I was a kid, and they're in their 40s, their 50s, they're wearing the FEN t-shirts, which is our Far East Network, may have been what it was called, but it is just insane the impact that we've had since we began on the community and helping them just kind of be closer to each other with the Americans and then the local nationals as well. So
yeah, it's a great, great service. And I hope that our senior leaders out there never, ever do anything to take away that capability, because it's a what I would call a a force multiplier as a commander, something essential to my mission. It's a great, great job that you guys do.
Perfect. Well, thank you, sir. Once again, that was U.S. Forces Japan and 5th Air Force Commander, Lieutenant General Jerry Martinez. And, sir, I saw on your bio your career in the Air Force started in 1986. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, looks like I wanted to end the interview by taking you back, and I'm sure our folks listening at Atsugi and Yokosuka will also appreciate this. Right now, Kenny Loggins on Eagle 810, serving America's best. That does it for the second hour of the Scotty G Midday Mix, but keep it locked right here. We got another 2 hours to hang out, getting you through your afternoon and taking us to the news. Here's Bozzy's Mind on Eagle 810.
I had a little bit too much of Hennessy. Just gonna tell y'all how I feel. Look.
How you look so precious when you smile. Yeah. Hit it from the back and drive you wild. Girl, I lose myself up in those eyes. I just had to let you know you're mine. Hands on your body, I don't wanna waste no time. Feels like forever, even if forever's tonight. Just lay with. I'm so happy that you are alive. Yeah. Swear to God I'm down. If you down, all you gotta say is right. Yeah. Girl,
anything I could do just to make you feel alright. Oh, I just had to let you know you're fine. Running circles around my mind. Even when it's rainy, all you ever do is shine. You on fire, you a star just like Mariah. Man, this feel incredible, I'll turn you to a bride, yeah. My hands on your body, I don't wanna waste your time. Feels like forever, even if forever's tonight. Just lay with me, waste this night away with me, yeah. My, I can look away, I just gotta say.
Eagle 810.